right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we're now moving exclusively over to the energy sector, chatting with Joseph Schachter. Joseph is the founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also writes the Ion Energy Report, which is a free report, more just outlining the fundamental drivers, the data around the oil and natural gas sector. That Schachter Energy Report is where Joseph dives into a wide range of energy companies, sharing his thoughts and when he thinks a good time to buy is. Now, Joseph, let's start, as we always do, higher level on natural gas and oil, starting off with natural gas. The price is a little bit off its highs right now, trading about $3.88 in around that region. Again, it was up in the 450 region not that long ago. I keep hearing about storage levels, these being a key driver and how storage levels are below, about 10% below the five-year average. And supply has been generally slower to come back online in this higher natural gas price environment. We hardly saw over $3 last year. And now it's held above $4 for quite a bit of this year. Joseph, give us some clarity here on where you see the natural gas price moving.
Yeah, we've backed off a little bit, and that's because the EIA report that came out last Thursday showed a build. Normally, March is still a draw season, and then April 1st is the beginning of the injection season, and then that goes till November, and then November starts the withdrawal season again for the winter. So we had a 9 BCF increase last week. South Central had 28 BCF increase, while the East was still cold and had a 12 BCF draw. So, you know, that kind of spooked the markets. And from 430, you came back down to the 380s. But the positive for the industry is record LNG exports. The data from last week, 15.7 BCF. That's the highest number ever. And remember, 10 years ago, there was nothing on the LNG business. So that's quite a thing. And when 10 years ago, Canada and the States were both talking about it. Canada's not going to get our first one until, you know, July on stream. And the Yanks have, 15.7 BCF exporting. So that's why we're still in these high threes. And again, this summer, you'll be having air conditioning demand, more data center demand, where natural gas is used as the fuel. So I think we're looking at, a 350 on the bottom now, over the next number of months at the low, but I think 450 on the high. And then winter of 2025, 26, we'll see if we punch above $5 if we have cold weather and big and more exports of LNG with the additional plants coming on. As you mentioned earlier, the comparison storage now is 10% below 5 years ago, but more importantly, it's down 26.8%. from last year. So this big drawdown really woke everybody up to the fact that, yes, storage is important, but weather is even more important. And the cold weather we had this winter really drew down stocks in the United States, significantly in Europe, shocked everybody. That's why they were buying cargoes from Asia at $15. Shipments that were heading to Asia to get $13 US were now being moved over to go to Europe for $15 to $17. I think 17, 18 was the high per MCF US dollars in demand in Germany, especially where storage got drawn down very quickly.
Well, Joseph, just in light of how natural gas is really more of a regional market, like you're saying, like different countries are paying totally different amounts. And even inside of the US or inside of Canada, there's different amounts that are based on the West Coast and East Coast where the different fields are. Do you think that we start seeing a normalization of nat gas prices as more LNG terminals are built, not just in the U.S., but also in Canada, and more of this starts shipping around? Will it lift domestic North American prices up to a more stable level? And will some of the Asian and European markets come back down? Will there be some kind of equilibrium is what I'm getting at?
I think Asia and Europe are separate issues because, they need LNG. There's a cost for LNG to liquefy it, ship it, and then, and then move it into a gas format again. So there's going to always be a big price difference between that and the producing nations like the United States and Canada. So, and Europe, of course, because they used to buy from Russia, unless Russia and Ukraine solve their problems and there's a peace deal that's sustainable, you won't be, Trump's already waving the flag saying that we'd open up Nord Stream 1 if Russia signs a peace deal and they finalize everything and both sides, say, yeah, well, this is the deal and this is the land concessions and the fighting stops. So, I think in the US, we're looking at more LNG capacity coming on. In Canada, the big thing is our LNG Canada project, train one, will take one BCF this summer, total of two BCF by the end of the year. But this summer, with all the positive that Shell's been talking about the natural gas demand for, around the world into the, 2040, they're talking, I think, a 60% increase in demand for natural gas. I think LNG Canada will be announcing phase, train two, and that plus Cedars, I think, will help to tighten it. We're about 2.25 right now for AECO in Canada, which is a lot better than this time of year. You might see $1.50 or $1 even. So we're a little stronger. LNG Canada comes on, that keeps us in a $2 range. And then the end of the year, I think we can move into the threes. And then I think into 2026, we could be within a 250 on the bottom and a $4 on the top. Prices in Eastern Canada are higher because you have to add in transportation. So the Dawn market is always higher than the AECO market. But AECO and Station 2 will improve once we see LNG Canada 1 on and the announcement of LNG Canada 2.
Okay, so overall, you're seeing just a positive environment for natural gas. Sounds maybe even a little less volatile, but at least the downside being limited. What about oil? Oil seems to be a completely different market. The about $65 a barrel region has held for years here, but we're consistently seeing lower highs. We're getting this tightening pennant formation where if $65 breaks, who knows where that bottom could be? So, are you worried that we could see a breakdown below $65 a barrel?
My work says, 64, 65 is the bottom. You always have to have a little room on these charts, especially the deeper they go down, with that technical pattern, you get lower lows and you get lower highs, until it breaks one way or the other. I think we're going to break to the upside this summer for two reasons. One, summer demand is about 1 million barrels plus higher than we are today. So even with tariffs, you're going to see a demand increase in domestic market areas. We may not see as much use of diesel for shipping, international shipping, but more domestic demand, as we see local economies, decide how they're going to solve the tariff problem with exports to the States. Second, I think geopolitical risk is coming back this summer. You've already got the United States regularly knocking out Houthi, armaments and Houthi leadership and command and control so that they stop their attacks on shipping in the Red Sea. The cost of shipping by going around the Horn is very expensive, so they would like to see the Red Sea reopen for commercial shipping. Every week there's attacks on American destroyers in the Red Sea, so they've sent in a carrier group as well, and they're just knocking the hell out of the Houthi military infrastructure. And they're moving two more carrier groups into the area because they want to have capacity for Iran. Iran is within weeks of potentially getting sufficient nuclear material, weapons-grade material, for up to a dozen, some of the reports are saying, of intercontinental ballistic missiles. The Israelis, of course, aren't going to want to see that happen. The US is not going to want to see that happen. So we're getting to the 11th hour where something has to give. Either the Iranians say, okay, we will agree to, demilitarize and give up our nuclear weapons program in return for sanction relief, so because their economy's in tatters and the mullahs are out of favor with the population. So that's a positive potentially. And so I think that if the Iranians do not come to the table, we could be looking at some military confrontation between America and Iran or America and Israel and Iran. That's good for a 10 buck pop in the price of crude almost overnight.
Okay, Joseph. So even though we've been trending in the $65 to $70 range, you see a case for $80 tacking on another $10 to the price. When you look at the oil stocks, despite the muted price moves in the underlying commodity, they've actually been pretty strong. We were looking at XLE. It's up, knocking on higher levels again. A lot of the individual oil stocks have jumped up double digits. So what do you make of the divergence between where the energy stocks are going, even in a kind of a lackluster oil market?
Yeah, I think the key is when we're seeing the Q4 2024 results and the outlooks for 2025 Companies are talking shareholder returns. They're not talking about growth. They're not talking about spending more than cash flow. Many companies are trying to spend 50, 60% of cash flow to keep steady production, and the remainder of being used, if there's a debt problem, pay down that debt. And if it's not a debt problem, then some growth, but half to three quarters of what they call free funds flow or free cash flow that's not needed to keep the business on a sustainable, steady pace, then they're using the excess for shareholder returns. And some focus more on dividends, some focus more on their NCIB, normal course issuer bid, stock buybacks. Some of the best companies are doing both, and the market loves that.
So, what do you think it'll take for these companies to focus a little bit more on growth? Obviously, higher prices help, but what about those blended companies that also have that natural gas production? I'm just not seeing a whole lot of supply coming online as quickly as maybe you would expect in this higher price environment.
No, not really. But you look at the Baker Hughes drilling stats from last week Friday. The Canadian rig count's at 180 now. It's normally low, goes down quite a bit now because of spring breakup, but that's still 6.5% above a year ago. And when you go down between gas and oil, the gas rig count is 61 versus 78 a year ago, down 22%. But the oil rig count, again, because the ability to export through the TMX and also there's still capacity on the Enbridge lines, is at 118 rigs versus 91, up 29.6%. So if you have capacity to move product, you're seeing the increase, while natural gas really needs that 2 BCF of export capacity on LNG Canada to really make a difference in the activity for people drilling directly for gas.
Well, Joseph, just to that point, when you look at US gas-focused companies, they've had a good response because gas is up near $4. But when you look at the Canadian companies, they've not had as big of a move because the AECO price is around 250, because you see that being constructive where it could get up to 3, 350, and maybe even 4 by next year. How are you looking at Canadian nat gas companies?
Well, Canadian nat gas companies that have liquids, condensate and other liquids, have been very strong. 20% rise in things like NuVista. Peyto's had a good run. Paramount's had a good run. You've seen, Tourmaline have a good run. So you're seeing some big moves in those names, which have liquids. Some of the ones that are dry gas, take a name that you guys are familiar with, Pinecliff. The stock is near their 52-week lows. So you need that liquids component to be significant for the market to give you some juice and upside in terms of people buying it. Other companies, like the more dry gas guys, are just saying, look, let's be steady Eddie, let's pay down some debt, continue to pay our dividends, and build up a nice drilling inventory when gas prices are higher.
Have you noticed the market rewarding market cap size companies, either large or small, probably the bigger ones? Is the market more favorable right now to a certain size of energy company in Canada?
The key thing is liquidity. So you look at CNQ, it was trading around 40. It's up 10%, 44.76. So you look at Cenovus trading at 20.37. That's not really moved at all. The high for the year 29.96, low 17.43. So Cenovus hasn't woken up from its deathbed. Baytex really hasn't moved. So there's some stocks that really are asleep, while others have had a good bounce. So, I think it matters on, the market. When investors come and want to get into the sector, they look at Suncor, which is 55.55, just $3 off its 52-week high. The low is 48, so they go there. They look at Imperial, they look at CNQ, and so they go where there's liquidity, so that if there's a decision, oops, I'm wrong, they can get out pretty quickly.
Joseph, what do you think the environment's like for M&A deals right now with oil prices where they are, where nat gas prices they are? Is there incentive? Is it a buyer's market or a seller's market? Do you expect to see more transactions?
Well, we saw Paramount sell at a very good price, $3.3 billion, to Ovintiv, if you remember that big sale. And now they're going to grow with the assets they have and build another big company out of it. So that's positive. Everybody on the gas side, if you have assets in northwest Alberta, northeast BC, You're not going to want to sell now, before the LNG business becomes material. So I would stay with the names on weakness. If I'm right that there's a little bit of weakness in the near term, keep on building your positions. If you recall a month ago when you and I were talking, I was saying we're in a fabulous buying opportunity. Stocks are very cheap. You can get in great, 8, 9, 10% yields in growth story names, both on the oil and the natural gas liquids kinds of stories. And we've had a great bounce, 20% in 3 weeks. But could we back and fill here if we back off $3, $4? Yes. So if the war premium shrinks and we're in the shoulder season until the summer driving season, which is that's June, the end of June, not April, not March. So I think there's a window here for one more pullback. But the approach I would be taking is buy the dip and add to your business.
I just find it so interesting. You look at these large sector-specific ETFs, the energy ETFs, and as we said, they're doing very well. If some of these ETFs bounce not even a percent from this level and close the month a percent higher from where they're at, it'd be the highest monthly close ever, all-time high monthly close. It seems like investors are still closely watching this energy sector. Why do you think that is, Joseph? Has there just been a broad shift more to maybe a interest in commodities from investors?
Number one, I think there is more interest. Look at copper, record new highs on the nominal for two reasons. One, of course, the tariffs issue. And the second, Chile is having problems producing, and it's one of the biggest producers of copper in the world. So you've got a fundamental reason with the ability for production, and then the other side of it being the tariffs, on imports. So, we've seen what, $5.20, $5.30 for copper. So that's just one. I think the ETFs is where new investors, younger investors are not wanting to focus on doing their homework on individual companies. So just like they're buying ETFs, for Bitcoin or for AI or for, anything that they're interested in, the easy way to nibble if you're a newbie investor and not someone who's used to doing homework on individual companies, buy the XLE from the point of view of, getting your foot in the door on energy.
What are your thoughts on something like XOP playing the smaller companies or OIH for the energy services? We haven't really talked about the drillers and the pipeline companies. Any thoughts on those sectors?
Well, the drillers haven't really done well because, the rig count in the States is, as I said, it's down five. Well, it's 5% down from, week to 593 rigs down from 624. And both the oil and the gas rig counts in the States are below a year ago. Again, so it just says to you that $70 oil does not attract more money. So, Trump's a drill, baby, drill, and let's get lower oil prices. The industry is not reacting to that. In fact, they're saying, oops, we're not spending money if we can't make a good rate of return. So they're waiting for the regulations to change in the States. And if the economics make sense, they'll do it. But I don't see companies spending more than cash flow anymore because shareholder returns are a big component of what boards have been forced to consider based on shareholder demand.
Oh, that's what we hear from all the companies we talk to in the energy space is that investors want money returned to them, rightfully so, mostly in the form of dividends, although some are okay with share buybacks. Joseph, you mentioned that you can sit in some of these stocks right now with a 8, 9, 10% dividend yield. Care to share with us any of the names that you really like that are paying a higher dividend?
Yeah, I'll just pull up my pages for that. But on my last run, you were getting, from the service sector side, you were able to get like a 6% yield in Enbridge. And then on oil, in Royalty Trust, you were able to get an 8.4% yield on a Freehold. You were able to get a 7.8% yield on a Whitecap. Some of the international names like Africa Oil and Alvopetro, 10% yields are there. Pinecliff, we just talked about paying, monthly dividends, 6 cents annually, 7.9% yield. Surge Energy was trading under five. It's now a $6 name, but on $6, that's an 8.7% yield. So it was over 10% yield. And then you go to In-Play Oil, which is a name you guys know, doing the merger with some Obsidian assets in the Cardium, 18-cent annual dividend, monthly paid, 11.4% yield. Petrus Resources, another Cardium player, paying an 8.8% dividend yield. So there's some very attractive yields out there. And so the question is, do you make the decision based on market cap, You want to make the decision based on where their production is. Do you want oil? Do you want oil and natural gas or just natural gas with liquid? So, investors have a lot to choose from. The service stocks have not reacted because of the weak drilling inventory, drilling activity, especially in the US. Pricing for day rates for drilling rigs has gone down. Even the frackers are having problems with pricing. So until we get into the summer and maybe high, and the higher prices that I'm forecasting, I think the service sector will lag. But historically, the torque on service sector stocks is enormous. So, for example, if I pull out a couple of the names here, if you look at Ensign, it's 239 today. Its 52-week high was 352. The low is 205, so it's closer to the low. Precision Drilling was at 109.20 at the high. It's 67.72. The low for the year, 62.16. So you can just see from that, how big the gap is between the high and the low.
What about the pipeline companies? Because they're part of the oil services and there's such a focus on infrastructure and moving these fluids around. What about the pipeline companies?
Well, they've done very well. For example, Enbridge is 63.43, the high for the year 65.62, the low 45.39. So Enbridge, because of the yield, because of the rising dividend, it's gotten a lot of attraction. If you go to something like TransCanada, TRP, 69.44, the 52-week high 70.97, the low 48.12. So they're all trading because of that consistent and growing dividend and liquidity. The yields have come down because people have chased those securities. And of course, you compare that to what you can get in the bank, and it's double or triple that they pay in the bank, and you had a growing dividend. So you can see why retail and institutional investors that need income are looking at the sector and bought them. They've had a good run. I wouldn't chase them here, but if there was any pullback and the yields went up, or the stock prices went closer to the 52-week low, then there'd be a reason to go back and add to those positions.
All right, so Joseph, circling around to the one thing that you said is that not a whole lot of these companies are focused on growth right now, especially the oil producers. You mentioned one, In-Play Oil, that's going through a big transaction that really transformatively could change that company. Anything else out there, company-wise, on your radar that is or are companies showing growth or in the middle of transactions that we should be paying attention to?
Well, you know about the Veren, Whitecap deal, which increases the dividend for the Veren shareholders. Veren's popped beautifully on that. We've been fortunately investors in Veren. We'll be the investors in Whitecap going forward. In-Play with the deal with Obsidian when it closes is accretive on a cash flow basis, strengthens their balance sheet. They financed it with equity and debt, and they see it as an accretive transformational deal for them. So I think there's names like that. And then you look at companies that sold assets and have assets now that they can grow. Paramount, they did the big deal with for 3.2, 3.3 billion with Ovintiv. They have now 800 million of cash on the balance sheet, 500 million worth of investment assets, and they're in a growth mode again. So, Paramount's 18.54, the low is 14.33. But remember, you got at the high was 33.06, but you got to remove $12, which was a shareholder return of capital, and then there was a $3 extra dividend. So you got 15 bucks on that deal, and the company's so shareholders are really happy with that. And then they also now have a growth mode, and you're still going to have paid a 5 cent a month dividend or 60 cents. So that kind of name on any pullback is definitely something to consider.
All right, Joseph. Thanks for going around the horn with us here. We covered a lot in the energy sector. Could be another buying opportunity coming up. I just find it interesting just how much these stocks have rebounded with the rebound in the oil price, even though oil's not even back to $70 a barrel. Natural gas has been carrying the load. But again, these stocks still being looked at, I think, favorably, very much so by investors. Again, Joseph Schachter is the founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. You can click the link in the show notes on our website, on your podcast player, or on YouTube to learn more about Joseph's letter. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Please go back through our website, podcast, YouTube channel, and even subscribe to our new Substack, where you can see all of the more summaries of our interviews throughout the week and have them delivered to your email inbox. Joseph, thanks for taking time with us, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.